This is Diane Horn, your host on the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. In the November 5th general election, Seattle voters will be asked to decide whether to change the way we elect members of the Seattle City Council. Currently, all 9 council members are elected at large from the city as a whole. The City of Seattle's proposed Charter Amendment Number 19 concerns creating districts to elect 7 of 9 city council members. This measure would require the election of 7 city council members by district and 2 from the city at large. Should this measure be enacted into law? To help answer this question, I have as my guest James Bush, a member of the Steering Committee for the Districts Now campaign, a group that favors election by district. Welcome, James.
Thank you for having me here.
What is the purpose of Seattle Charter Amendment 19, or election by district? Why is it being proposed?
Well, basically, I believe, or the proponents of this believe, that government is best when it's closest to the people. We right now have a very top-down system. We elect all 9 council members citywide. This would replace it with a very bottom-up system, where the power would come up from the neighborhoods. Philosophically, I believe that once a city gets above about 100,000 population, they should have some sort of district representation because different parts of the city are different from each other. The politics may be different. The people are different. The land uses are different.
How do you see the ability of people being able to run for office being affected by this amendment?
Well, I think it will really open up our city council to different voices. I think right now, you need about $250,000, $250,000 to run a winning city council campaign. Under our system, by cutting the number of voters you would have to contact by 6/7, you'd be able to run effective city council campaigns, I think, for less than $100,000. I think this would open up the field to neighborhood activists, to members of the state legislature, to people who are not known citywide. It would just give you a larger group of people who could serve on city council.
Well, a number of other larger cities do have election by district. What is the evidence that election costs will in fact go down with district elections?
Well, specifically, a recent study by University of Washington Bothell student Jason Malinowski, he compared cities of similar size to Seattle, and he found the average campaign cost for a citywide election was $214,000, and the average cost for a district seat was $83,000. And essentially, if you're a campaign person, you know your major cost is voter contact, and the number of voters, as I said, that you have to contact comes down by 6/7. Also, a large city like Seattle is too large to doorbell, that is, go door to door and try to meet voters face to face. And under our system, our districts, which would be 88,000 people, are very capable of being covered by a single candidate and a few volunteers going door to door.
What would you say to those who believe that the opportunity to run for office might actually be more limited with district elections, since a district candidate could only run in a given district and that council spot might already be taken by a popular incumbent? Now people can run for a number of different seats.
Well, that's one of the reasons that we kept 2 citywide seats in the mix. I think that there will always be an opportunity to run for public office, but I think right now, under the current system, there's a great many people who would like to run for public office but are not doing it because they don't see themselves as being capable of raising the large amount of money that it costs right now.
Election by district has been rejected 3 times in the past by Seattle voters. How is this time different?
Well, I know that there was an effort back in the 1970s, but I can't really tell you about that. More recently, in 1995 and in 2003, the systems run both those times were 9 district systems. That is, all the council members served districts. And really, I think what we learned from those 2 elections was that people were more interested in seeing a mixed system or a hybrid system like we're presenting this time. And another major difference is that we have actually drawn up our proposed districts for the first 10 years. Like all districts, they would be redistricted every decade.
Would you elaborate on the purpose of having a hybrid system, both district and at large council members? You've alluded a bit to that already, but would you say more?
Well, I think a lot of people claim that if you have only district representation, people are bogged down on issues in their own district and don't pay attention to citywide issues. First off, I think that's silly. From my own personal experience, I've worked as a county council aide for 5 years, and I found that county council members were very interested in countywide issues, very interested in regional issues, and I just think if you're in office, you still need to be part of a coalition that's going to get 5 votes to get anything done. So there's a basic citywide nature to the council, no matter how you elect the members.
What is your response to people who say that citizens may have less influence if voters approve district elections, since they now can vote for only 3 council members rather than 9?
I would come back and say, look at the last 2 council elections. 2 years ago, all 5 council members ran for a re-election. Only 1 had a serious challenge. All 5 got elected. This year, only 2 of 4 members have serious challenges, and it looks like all 4 are going to be elected again. So the notion that an individual citizen has vast power over these 9 council members doesn't appear to me to be correct.
A representative from an individual's district would presumably be more responsive to their concerns, but to have a measure pass the council, there would need to be support from other council members as well, council members that you didn't vote for and who may not feel they're beholden to you. How would this play out, do you think?
It'll change the dynamics of council, certainly. I think council members now are going to have to talk to each other. They're going to have to go out and put votes together to get support for citywide measures. But I think, again, from my experience at the county council, when there's a big vote, everyone gets letters, not just from their own district. They get them from everywhere. Everyone gets phone calls. Everyone has citizens who are contacting them, trying to influence them. I think it's still a very open system.
But don't you think that if people were in a different district, they would be less likely to be concerned about the letters they got from someone outside their district?
Well, I think public officials look at letters and contacts like that as sort of a measurement of the general public interest. But, well, to be honest, though, if you are a districted council member and it's pretty clear your district wants you to vote one way, that's a pretty clear message. So I think council members would still be influenced by citywide feelings, but I think this would lead to more contested votes. I can give you an example. The downtown tunnel, when that went through, it was pretty much unanimous. But I suspect under a districted system, if the West Seattle residents didn't feel they were getting a good deal from that, or if Ballard residents didn't feel they were getting a good deal from that, it would have been a 7-2 or 6-3 vote. And I think contested votes aren't a bad thing. I think they're a reflection of different opinions in the community.
I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is James Bush, a member of the steering committee of the District's Now campaign. Our topic is the City of Seattle proposed Charter Amendment 19, which concerns creating districts to elect 7 of 9 city council members. Charter Amendment 19 will be on the ballot in the November 5th general election. And you are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on listener-powered KEXP 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. How is the relation of the mayor to the city council likely to change with district elections?
As I said, I think that the dynamics on city council will change, and obviously they would also change with the mayor. It's hard to say because if you look, say, at the last 10 years, there was very much a feeling under Mayor Nichols that the mayor was powerful and the council was powerless. And now, 4 years later, under Mayor McGinn, there's a feeling that the council is very powerful and basically pushing the mayor around. So the dynamics in City Hall really do change with the different people coming in and out and who happens to be mayor and who happens to be on council. I think under a districted system, I think you would have leaders emerge among the council who would be good at putting together 5 votes.
What would you say to those who believe the mayor would be more powerful if council members were elected by district?
Well, I don't think that's been the case in other cities. I don't think that's the case in state legislatures. I think when a lot of people look at state legislatures, they think that for example, legislators who represent rural districts aren't as strong as people who represent in-city districts, but that's definitely not the case. It has a lot to do with the personalities of the people who are elected. I think any weak mayor is going to make a council look strong, and any strong mayor is going to make a council look weak.
How were the proposed districts drawn? What were the criteria?
What we were trying to do was look at how you're supposed to draw districts. They're supposed to be compact, contiguous areas. They're supposed to, and when I say they're supposed to, that's state districting law. And you're supposed to try to not separate areas of common interest or established neighborhoods. If you look at how we drew the districts, we tried to use as much as possible geographic boundaries. Our number one and two districts, Southwest and Southeast Seattle, the boundaries are the shorelines, basically, and the Duwamish River. And as we got into downtown, I think I-5 becomes kind of a natural divider. And obviously the Ship Canal separates the northern districts from the other districts. So our map was put together by Dr. Richard Morrell, who is a emeritus professor at the University of Washington in geography. And it was built around census tracts, and that's how we separate the areas.
Would you say a few words about the different districts specifically, what they're like racially, other ways?
Well, let's see. We could go around the horn. District 1 is West Seattle, and as I said, the dividing line is the Duwamish River, and I think that's a very established part of Seattle. And District 2 is Southeast Seattle. It's obviously the most diverse district. District 3 is Capitol Hill and Madison Park, Madrona, that area. District 4, I think it's 4, 5, and 6 are the North End districts, and then District 7 is Queen Anne, Magnolia, and downtown.
The last one you mentioned has neighborhoods that don't seem to naturally fit together, downtown with Magnolia, for example. Would you comment?
Well, somebody's got to get downtown. I know that some people in Queen Anne and Magnolia would rather not have had downtown. It's really a question. If you look at the way we did the map with our two southern districts and the three you have to have in the North End, because the North End has about 40% of the city's population, really the major issue is, are you going to separate them up and down or side to side? And we decided up and down. That's basically the answer there. Downtown could have been paired, say, with Capitol Hill, but that wasn't the way we went.
So for people who live in that 7th district, if they live in Queen Anne or Magnolia, they might feel that with downtown as part of their mix, that a representative might not represent them the way they would hope.
Well, Queen Anne and Magnolia have a lot more people than downtown, so they will have the final say at the ballot box.
What would you say to those who are concerned that the way the districts are drawn favors single-family homeowners over apartment and condo dwellers?
Well, I don't necessarily understand the argument, but I think 70% of the land area in our city is single-family zoned. So I'm not sure how you would draw the districts differently. And one thing possibly you could have done is to create a downtown Capitol Hill district, but then you have just a single district with a fairly large renter population. I don't know that that's necessarily an issue that we thought about, but I really think that people are capable of organizing to take one of these council seats. I don't think you're less capable of organizing if you're a renter than if you're a homeowner. In fact, maybe you'll work harder.
What is the mechanism for updating districts over time?
It's a fairly standard redistricting system every 10 years. The reason, of course, why redistricting is done every 10 years is it's based on an actual U.S. Census. So 10 years after this goes in, we will redistrict again.
What is the residency requirement for candidates who would run in a given district?
You would have to be a registered voter in that district 120 days before filing. And the purpose for that is so there isn't any sort of, well, hanky-panky as far as people suddenly getting an apartment in the next district the day before filing and doing it that way. And if you moved out of your district, just like if you were a state legislator or a congressional representative, you would be out of a job. Someone would be appointed in your place who lived in that district.
So a person winning office would need to continue to live in that district until their term of office expired.
Absolutely.
How widespread is election by district in the U.S.?
Well, right now, of the 50 largest cities, 47 of them have some sort of district representation. The three outliers are Seattle, Portland, and Columbus, Ohio. Columbus is right now looking at districts. Two big cities, it used to be five, I think, when we first started looking at this, and both Austin and the city of Detroit have gone away from at-large elections.
How well has district representation worked in other places, particularly places that have more recently changed to election by district?
Well, I'm not really an expert on that. I know that the Austin example has been fairly contentious, mainly because they have to draw up their districts. It has been quite a fight to create the new districts in the city of Austin. If I could go slightly back to the year 2000, the city of San Francisco went from at-large elections to district elections, and they saw immediately there was less campaign spending. For example, Gavin Newsom, who is now the mayor of San Francisco, raised $500,000 for his first council campaign, which was an at-large campaign, and he raised $99,000 for his second one, which was a district campaign. Also, in San Francisco, which is a majority-minority city, they had never had a majority-minority council, and that also changed after district elections.
You are tuned to the sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters on KEXP Seattle 90.3 FM and on the web at kexp.org. I'm Diane Horn, and my guest is James Bush, a member of the steering committee for the District's Now campaign. Our topic is the City of Seattle's proposed Charter Amendment No. 19, which concerns creating districts to elect seven of nine city council members. Charter Amendment 19 will be on the ballot in the November 5th general election. Who or what groups are promoting election by district?
Well, obviously we're promoting election by district, but right now we have been endorsed by the King County Democrats and the King County Republicans. Curiously enough, I don't know how many efforts can claim that. The 46th District Democrats, the Metropolitan Democratic Club, individuals, Speaker of the House Frank Chopp, State Senator Sharon Nelson, State Representative Jessen Farrell, quite a few members of our legislative delegation. And I'll go back, who is a member of our group? It's mainly people who have been activists over the last 20 years, a few people from the earlier district efforts, the 2003 and the 1995, but people who have been involved in politics in Seattle for a number of years and feel that the system is too top-down.
Who or what groups are against election by district?
Well, there's an opposition group. I think it's called Choices Not Districts. And they and there's a group called Citizens for Proportional Representation, I think, is the other group that's against it. Really, I don't think there are any other groups have endorsed against us.
Where is the major funding for election by district coming from?
Well, that's a member of our group, a woman named Faye Garneau, is our major funder. Faye, I've known for like 30 years. She's an activist in the Aurora Avenue Merchants Association. She and other property owners in the Aurora Corridor started this group back in the 80s because they didn't feel they were getting police presence and there were problems with prostitution and drug dealing in their area that weren't getting fixed. And Faye has personally put a lot of the money into this campaign. We also have more than 100 donors who have also donated to this, but obviously Faye has donated the vast majority of the funds.
What do you see as the relation between Seattle Proposition 1, the public financing of elections in Seattle, and Amendment 19, election by district?
Well, they're trying to fix one problem, and we're trying to fix two. And the fact that fair elections is on the ballot is an acknowledgement by the current council members that there is a problem, that it costs too much money to get on the city council, and the candidates have to spend too much of their time raising money. So what Proposition 1 does is keeps the citywide system but tries to fix the money problem. And what we're trying to do is to make a structural change that will address the money problem, but will also add better representation for all Seattle residents.
Do you see public financing as a benefit?
So I think it certainly could be a benefit, yes.
If Charter Amendment 19, election by district, were to pass, what would be the timeline for moving to an election by district system?
Okay, well, if it passes in November, right away you would have all 9 council seats on the ballot in 2015. And the 7 districted seats would be elected for 4-year terms and for 4-year terms thereafter. The 2 citywide seats would be elected for 2 years this first time and then for 4-year terms thereafter, so as to stagger the terms. And from then on, you would have 1 city election with all 7 districted council members, and the next city election, you would have all the citywide seats, that is the mayor, the city attorney, and the 2 citywide council seats.
So for current council members, the ones that are running in this election cycle would actually only be in for 2 years if Amendment 19 passes, and then they'd have to run again instead of waiting the 4 years that they normally would have.
That's correct.
Well, what's the message you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, our main message is that government works best when it's closest to the people. It's a philosophical choice of a top-down system right now where the council functions as sort of the city's board of directors. And what we are proposing is a bottom-up system that functions more like a neighborhood-based legislative body. It is a philosophical choice. Do you think that the city is best run by people who have good access to money and sort of a citywide base, or by people who are active in their own neighborhood and who have that support in their own neighborhood? So I think that is the choice voters face with Charter Amendment number 19.
Well, thanks so much for being here, James.
Thank you for having me.
You are just listening to James Bush, a member of the Steering Committee for the Districts Now campaign, speak about the City of Seattle Charter Amendment 19, which concerns creating districts to elect 7 of 9 city council members. Charter Amendment 19 will be on the ballot in the November 5th general election. For more information, check on the web at seattledistrictsnow.org. And for arguments against Charter Amendment 19, go to choicesnotdistricts.wordpress.com. Again, that's seattledistrictsnow.org and choicesnotdistricts.wordpress.com. The sustainability segment of Mind Over Matters program you have just heard will be on the streaming archive section of KEXP's website at kexp.org for the next 14 days. In addition, sustainability segment interviews are available as podcasts, along with KEXP's music podcasts. Go to kexp.org, click on Demand, and then Podcasting. I'm Diane Horn. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in to the sustainability segment again next week on listener-powered 90.3 FM and kexp.org.